Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Dr. Ted Baer is founder and publisher of Movie Guide and chairman of the Christian Film and Television Commission, as well as a noted critic, educator, lecturer, and media pundit. Ted was president of the organization that produced The Chronicles of Narnia for CBS TV, boasting 37 million viewers and winning an Emmy Award. He's also produced hundreds of programs for PBS television. Ted has been a featured guest on Oprah, Hannity and Combs, CNN, ABC, Fox News, MSNBC, and Entertainment Tonight. As chairman of the Christian Film and Television Commission, he's dedicated to redeeming the values of the mass media of entertainment by influencing the entertainment industry, and by informing and equipping the general public of the impact that the mass media has on its audiences. I'm excited to have him here today. Ted, welcome to Heartline.
Oh, it's great to be with you on Heartline.
I love your quote, "He who controls the media controls the culture." Can you expound on that?
There have been about 500,000 studies done on the media, according to Senator Lieberman from Connecticut. And of those, 99.99% say the media has an influence. In fact, everybody in the media knows it has an influence, otherwise they wouldn't sell commercials or,
right,
or advertise their programs. So the media has created the culture for a long time. When Bambi came out, the gun industry went from a $9 billion industry to $4.5 billion within a year.
And really?
It was an amazing drop. And that was the only reason, because of Bambi. When Rebel Without a Cause came out, which was such a big movie, there were kids poking pickaxes into people's tires, which was unique to that movie. So when we get to the Aurora shootings, we're pretty much clear that susceptible people, now, this is the key word that I'm saying here, susceptible. Not everybody is susceptible to violence. Not everybody is susceptible to drugs. Not everybody is susceptible to sex. That's why God has seven deadly sins. There's different people, and we know pretty much Dartmouth, a week before, my alma mater Dartmouth, a week before, published a study on sex in films and the influence, and it was absolutely incredible study, and they dropped all of the secondary correlation language and said this is just irrefutable. So we pretty much know who gets affected, how they get affected, and why things like the Aurora shooting take place, and these are a confluence of media that is corrupting the culture.
Yeah. You've said your life's purpose is to be used of God to redeem the values of the media and to educate audiences on how to use discernment in selecting their entertainment. How did that become your passion?
Well, because I grew up a pagan in the entertainment industry, and I was on the other side for many years. You know, I could tell you a lot of salacious stories, but I don't want to, you know, sort of glorify the bad. But because my father was a star on Broadway, he'd been a star in cowboy movies in the 30s and won the box office award in 36. My mother was a star. His name was Tex Allen in cowboy movies.
Really?
My mother was Evelyn Pierce.
Yeah.
So I grew up in a very non-Christian, very pagan culture. In fact, after I came to Christ, I used to pray in a little church in New York, and one of the assistant pastors said, "Why don't you come on Sunday?" And I said, "What do you do on Sunday?" And looking back on it, I said, how could I have been so clueless about what they did on Sunday? So, you know, I grew up, doing great schools, Dartmouth, Cambridge, et cetera, but being a pagan, being very anti-Christian, and financing five feature films that were pretty salacious. One was Oliver Stone's first film, Don't Look It Up. You'll you'll embarrass yourself and embarrass me.
Really?
So eventually somebody gave me a Bible. I came to Christ. I started going to seminary. I supported myself by being head of the TV departments. I went to an academic conference being held by the Annenberg Institute, which was researching the influence of media. Annenberg owned TV Guide, and he did a lot of research on the media. I spoke at that event, and it convinced me about the power. And I was saying, God, you know, forgive me for these movies that we've made, and which were violent, et cetera. And how can we change the industry? So that's from the get-go when I came to Christ. I was convicted by God, and my kids say all of my conversion and everything else shows that life is a miracle.
Wow. What was it like growing up in that environment with famous parents?
Now, I wasn't going to glorify that.
Well, people want to know that.
I mean, the good, all the things that people think are good, you know, my father was on Broadway for years. When I was born, he was starring as the romantic lead in Showboat. He starred for 40 years. His final play was 82, where he starred as one of the three male characters, the father of the bride and Whoopi.
Really?
All these were famous plays. He starred as Babcock in Andy Mame, the banker. So, you know, I grew up backstage, and there were a lot of stars and a lot of people. They were just... you know, people that you live with, and you say, why am I here? And a lot of good and a lot of nefarious activities take place.
Did you live in New York or did you live in L.A.?
It depended upon whether he was doing a movie or doing a play.
Okay. So it was, your parents never took you to church. They were godless, and that was...
Well, I mean, I don't know whether they were godless. They were... You know, my mother had some sort of a superstitious ontological nominalism base. She was a second-generation Christian Scientist, but she, you know, she died when I was 14 from a massive heart attack, and she had been sort of dabbled in Christian Science. We did a seance a week before she died. I don't want to get into all this because
it gets
too salacious, but anyway, you know, I said this, if she's dead and all these things about, you know, God is love and all this Christian Science stuff, and you know, it just doesn't work. So I became very antagonistic to that. And at one point, when I was at NYU Law School, before I put together the packet, legal packages for these films, I worked at the U.S. Attorney's Office. I was at NYU, and I was very left wing. I mean, I joined the National Lawyers Guild, which thought the ACLU was conservative, and represented the Chicago Seven. They're the ones who were representing the Occupy group this past year. So. They've always been on the hardcore Marxist end of the equation. So coming to Christ was a miracle.
Well, what got you interested? I mean, were you searching?
No, I wasn't searching. Somebody gave me a Bible and said, why don't you read it and tell me why you don't like Christians? It's sort of many people have had exactly the same story. You know, mm-hmm. Wycliffe, the great Bible translators that one of my three sons, four children worked for and just delivered a Bible to a people group in Papua New Guinea, you know, says that 60% of the people come to Christ through reading the Bible. I'm always running into people who are major, you know, calls in their life who came by reading the Bible. I recommend it. So, you know, I spent about 4 months not wanting to read the Bible, and then this wonderful woman, three women who had come to Christ, who Billy Graham sort of adopted me when my mother died and were nurturing and trying to get me to come to Christ. They were really annoying. And so I... finally, my father said, why don't you, you know, every week he said, why don't you read it? And I said, why don't you read it? And he didn't want to read it. So eventually I read the first part of Matthew, and I said, this is extremely boring. You know, begat, 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 begat.
Yeah.
How many begats are there? You can count them. And eventually when he said, oh, just go a little further, and God got me. I tried to use all my legal tools because I'd gone to NYU, one of the best law schools in the country, and all my critical tools that I learned at Cambridge and University of Bordeaux and Toulouse and Munich. And after all of that, I said, this is a true story. And that story resonates with a lot of people who've gone through exactly the same arc. It's not unique. If you ever want to bring somebody to Christ and they're really resilient and intellectual, just give them a Bible and tell them, tell me what's wrong with it. What do you find wrong with it? And if they're honest, they'll start looking.
Yeah. I followed Movie Guide for years, and I so appreciate being able to go to the site and get the real scoop on how suitable a movie will be for me. taking into consideration my Christian worldview, how did Movie Guide start out?
Well, after I came to Christ, I put myself through Episcopal Seminary because I didn't know any better.
Wow.
So I went to Episcopal Seminary in New York, and I supported myself by being head of the TV department at City University of New York, and then they elected me head of the Episcopal Radio TV, which had all the rights to the Chronicles of Narnia. And C.S. Lewis had come over in 1954 and tried to, and recorded what used to be on CBS and NBC. They used to have the Protestant Hour. And every couple of months, the organization that did it would change from Presbyterian to American Baptist to Episcopalian, et cetera. This was before the complete deluge of the church. And so C.S. Lewis was so grateful for being asked to America by my predecessor that he gave the rights to the Chronicles of Narnia, and they'd worked on it for 26 years. The average movie in Hollywood takes 13 years, and I came in. I knew the industry a little bit. We got it on CBS. We won an Emmy Award. We had 37 million viewers, which would today be equivalent to about 90 million viewers. At $10 a ticket, be equivalent to about $900 million. And it's the animated version that you can still get. And I said, you know, the stepson of C.S. Lewis is the godfather of my granddaughter, wanted to do it as a movie. I said, if it takes another 26 years, I'll be 60. And I was 60 when the movie, so I came out. The average movie in Hollywood takes 13 years. Spider-Man took 23 years, the first one. And,
wow.
All these movies took a long time. Evita took 24 years. Christie took 19 years. So I said, how can we get 26 people to make a great movie? So then we would, you know, have one Christian film a year. And how, if we get 26, maybe we could get 52. So Movie Guide became, one, a way to teach parents how to teach their kids to be discerning, but it also became part of this goal. Ken Wales, in 1981 or 82, introduced me to the head of the Protestant Film Office. They had kept Hollywood clean during the Golden Age when Mr. Smith went to Washington and It Was a Wonderful Life and the bells of St. Mary rung out across the land. And so we, really we took their playbook and started to put it to work. One, reviewing movies, helping parents to teach their kids to be media-wise. If you go to movieguide.org, it's free. If you want to get, constant reminders, it's free. And two, because the most powerful person in Hollywood is not Ted Turner. He lost his network. It's not the head of Disney who got fired last year. It's the 12 to 24-year-old that goes to movies. So if they go to Hangover, then Hangover becomes a success. If they go to October Baby, then October Baby becomes a success. So those are the people that make the decisions. It's the vote at the box office. If they vote for the bad, then the bad is going to succeed. So Movie Guide is to help parents and children. And the good news is we reach millions of people, and most of them are between the ages of 12 and 24. And then we collect data with it. We collect all these 122 criteria, and then we present it to the Hollywood. We give them a $100,000 prize, and then we do a detailed economic analysis of the box office to show them what does better at the box office. And we get just amazing stories going on all the time of people in Hollywood wanting to make great films because they've seen that they can do better at the box office.
Sure. So you actually interact with the producers and...
Yeah, I just sitting, just before I walked in here to take your call, I was with a man who's funded 8 films. He's a $3 billion man, and 2 days ago I was with another billionaire who had done, 5 films. So we're doing this all the time. We teach a class on how to succeed in Hollywood. You need to take the class. Come on,
take
the class. 4 days, how to succeed in Hollywood without losing your soul.
Well, that was my next question, too. I saw the book, and that was a great title. Can you talk about that?
The book came out because there were 19 billionaires, and maybe some of them were millionaires, who went off and made movies, like the man I just had lunch with, and they lost a lot of money. And then they came back, and they talked to me, and they said, what can we do? How can we do it right? How can we survive in this industry? So once a month, we take them to the head of Disney, the head of Warner Brothers, and spend a day or two with them, and they teach about how to succeed. If you remember Adam Smith, who was the father of free market economics in Scotland in the 1790s, he said, you look at success. So we looked at success once a month, not at failure. If you look at failure, you're going to continue to fail. And the book is really everything from finding out what your talents are, what you're called to do in the industry, to learning about contracts, to learning about how scripts, to learning about production, to learning about distribution, everything from what we could call it soup to nuts to everything you needed to know about Hollywood, we're afraid to ask. Mm. And as I said to the wonderful person today, you know what the problem is with an autodidact, don't you?
What?
An autodidact is a self-taught person. One, they don't know, the teacher doesn't know what to teach a student because he doesn't know what he needs to know to be able to teach the student. It's the guy teaching himself for the girl. So this book gives you the ability to actually do it and stop making home movies and start making, at least asking the right questions to make movies that can compete at the Olympics of great movies.
I was reading a piece by Joseph Farah, who's known you for many years, and he said when you first started out in Hollywood, you were fighting a lonely battle trying to restore some dignity to a liberal culture, and he thought you were wasting your time. But obviously it paid off. You're very well respected in Hollywood. But how was it in the early years?
Well, Hollywood is Hollywood is a little bit different than people think of it. When the world thinks of Hollywood, when the church thinks of Hollywood, they think they're these big meanies. And when, of course, when Hollywood thinks of the church, they always think that they look like the church lady on Saturday Night Live. So both of them are wrong. You know, that if I take it from Hollywood's point of view, actually the church, you know, there are 535,000 churches in America. There are 49,000 Protestant denominations, so many that you get, you know, just your head starts spinning if you even thought about it. And then you've got the Catholic and the Orthodox, and they all have different flavors. And within, you know, each denomination, you go from antinomian to hyper-conservative, from charismatic to extreme prophetic. So you've got many different flavors. Christians are not this unified glue that everybody thinks. And the same thing in Hollywood. Hollywood has always made great movies for the church. I mean, a friend of mine that just met with me last week, who's Jewish and had done 119 Academy Award nominee films, was the guy that worked with Bill Bright. He's still Jewish on the Jesus film. And another friend of mine, Vincenzo Labella, did Jesus of Nazareth since 79-80. And I did The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. You go back, you've got Ben-Hur and The Ten Commandments. So there's always been those great films. And there's always been terrible films, like The Campaign is coming up, which is just obscene and anti-Christian and everything else. So Hollywood makes a variety of movies because they want to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like the car companies. The car companies make convertibles for young guys who want to date, and they make sedans for guys who want to get to the office, and they make SUVs for women who don't want to get into car accidents and are taking their kids around. So Hollywood will do as many varieties. My wife is Argentine. They do Hispanic movies. They do African-American movies. They do the whole range. So they have always been open to what we do. It has not been Hollywood that's difficult. It's the church that's difficult, because the church for many years, I learned to go into a place. I was just with a very wonderful holiness group, and I'd say, before, do you go to movies? And everybody'd say, no, we don't go to movies. Now what I say is, did you see Batman? Oh, yeah, we saw Batman. Did you see this? Now, do you go to movies?
Yeah.
So let's get over the denial, because you cannot deal with the problem if you're in denial. There are good movies out there like Finding Nemo, and there are bad movies out there like Hangover. So the key is, once you're no longer in denial, you can start develop media wisdom and start making a difference. And the church can change. And if the church changes, Gallup says there are 149 million people go to church every week, we could change Hollywood overnight.
Yeah, they'd start producing more of movies with family values. And do you think most of the filmmakers are anti-Christian? Do they have an agenda?
There are two types of filmmakers. One, 60% of the films are made by independents, 40% of the films are made by the studios.
Mm.
The studios call it the entertainment industry because it's a business. They want to make money. You know, the average studio boss was making over $40 million last year. They want to make money for themselves and for everybody else in the system. So they try to make broad audience films, whether it's Captain America or, you know, Avengers or something that everybody will go see. You know, the director of the Avengers is extremely left-wing, but what he made is a movie that was extremely extremely patriotic and pro-American, and Captain America is the hero, and even has prayer in it. He even has positive references to faith in it. So no matter how liberal he is, but the independent films is where people separate in. You know, people do films for two purposes. One, to make money, like Avengers, and two, the independent films to get out their particular peccadillo and preference. So Ken Wales, who's a Christian, did Christie and Amazing Grace. His films are all Christian. Eduardo Verastegui, who we were just with, you know, he's a Christian. He's trying to do Christian films. And there are a lot of people. Sean Penn, you know, Sean Penn is, I think, out there in Venezuela campaigning for the communist Chavez. So he does communist films. His communist films do not win at the box office. Sean Penn has done a whole bunch of lousy independent films that never made more than $1 million at the box office. So what makes money is the studio films that are trying to reach a broad audience.
You know, there's a lot of controversy among Christian moviegoers as to what we should be seeing. And a lot of people believe that as Christians, we should be different. We shouldn't watch a lot of what's out there. And then there are others who believe that that's legalistic. What do you say to that?
What I say is you should only watch, you know, first place, if you don't go to movies, I think it's great. Two of my kids who work with me don't watch TV, and they haven't watched TV for 20 years, and I'm happy about that. And I watch, TV, so I'm not in the same class as they are. Two, if you're going to watch or if you're going to read, read the best. I mean, the filmmaker I was just with, I said, you should read the top 100 scripts of all time. You should see the top 100 movies. You should see the best. I mean, life is so difficult. If you wanted to see every movie that came out last year, you wouldn't have time to do your radio program.
Yeah.
So you're always making choices. Now the question is how to make the right choices. I was on a program like yours, and a boy called in, and he said, I've got discernment, that's why I can see these bad films. I said, well, the next stage is wisdom, to choose the good and reject the bad. The reason you exercise wisdom is, one, God calls you to do it, but two, what are you doing with your time? You know, are you going to become like the shooter in Aurora, that you're so swept away by being consumed by the tidal wave of entertainment that you can't do anything else? You're going to be like the guy in Korea who played so many video games that he died from forgetting to eat while he was playing video games? This is ridiculous.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, of course we make choices. And why would you go see something that was abhorrent, like the campaign with bestiality and evil stuff in it, when you can see something that's uplifting? I mean, it's just like 2016, or, you know, there are a lot of uplifting movies. So it's just a question of wisdom. Choose this day who you're going to serve. Choose the good, the true, and the beautiful. Now, we look at movies in a very comprehensive way. We use 122 criteria. We look at the ontology, the nature of meaning, the nature of existence, the nature of reality, the nature of history, the nature of love. Does it show love or lust? There are a lot of things to take into consideration. But, you know, we got a book for that, too, Culture Wise Family, and I'm teaching that in Russia, in India, in Korea. I spoke in Korea 2 years ago to 880 schools from around the world. Now they want to do Movie Guide in Korea. In Russia, they licensed Movie Guide for Russia. Now, I spoke there in Moscow in May, and I thought that was going to be it. Now they've asked me back for September. I got to go back to Switzerland. Every other country wants to guide and protect and give their children media wisdom. And the toughest thing, I just spoke to the head of ACSI, is getting the American Christian Schools International to get, really, media wisdom into the schools. Why are we not teaching our kids to be media wise? Probably because we're in the center of the maelstrom and we don't recognize the problem.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask you. Do you think that most Christians even realize the impact of what all of this is having on their heart, watching some of the stuff they watch?
One, I think you're asking extremely brilliant questions, but of course they don't. And that's why I was driving with somebody who'd been with us for a while, and after the Aurora shooting, he said, you know, you've been saying for years, the more intelligent a child is, the more infected by what they see. And that's all the studies, 500,000 studies. We know that the more intelligent, why do intelligent children get affected more than anybody else? Because they can visualize, they can fantasize, they incorporate it as their scripts of behavior. They get it. They get the message. The shooter in Aurora was brilliant. He was studying neuropsychology. You couldn't ask for anybody. Ted Bundy years ago was brilliant. It's always the brilliant guy gets affected. Klebold and Harris were very intelligent. you know, if you're letting your children, if you think that they have a brain and you're letting them watch this, those are the scripts of behavior they're going to develop.
Absolutely.
They're not going to tell you that they're developing those scripts of behavior. They're not going to articulate that to you. One, they're probably encoding them. But two, when those scripts bounce out, the scripts of how to treat somebody of the opposite sex, do you beat them up? Do you love them? Do you care for them? Where are the movies that teach us how to be civil partners in life? Where are the movies that teach us to be loyal and true? Those are what you need, because those are the scripts of behavior you want your children to have.
Yeah. Well, we're becoming desensitized because we sit in front of this stuff. And so, especially with just the language.
I go to screenings of the most abhorrent movies because we see everything, 100% of the movies.
So you go to them yourself and watch them all?
Yeah. We don't watch them all, but got a team of great reviewers. One got his PhD from Northwestern, but you're going in there to protect. We're spies upon the land. We're going in there to protect people. We're going in there to get the. But when you see kids in the movie theater, what are the parents thinking?
I know, it's horrifying.
I mean, I was just with somebody who had promoted the Da Vinci Code 2 days ago, and I said, "Have you read the book? You've read the book. Have you read the book?"
No, I haven't read the book.
Okay. In the middle, he said, well, you know, it was a way for witnessing. I said, in the middle of the book, there's a sacred orgy. I won't go any more about that. But it says the Jews used to use the temple for an orgy. That is absurd. The Jews died to protect the temple. The Jews were concerned about holiness. That's the most anti. And then it says God the Father slept with God the Holy Spirit in the middle of the Da Vinci Code. Are you kidding me? You're letting kids
read that,
read this and see this? That's what they're going to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you, I'm going, one, he had never read it, but two, why would he recommend it? And he was the head of a large Christian organization.
Gosh. Ted, how can folks become members of Movie Guide and support what you're doing for family values?
Well, thank you. Just go to movieguide.org. You can get a free weekly, the latest movies coming out to find out, to know before your kids go.
Thank you so much, Ted. It's just been a real pleasure. And God bless you to anything you put your hands to.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye
now. Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.
People call us up and say we're, I met a guy the other day, a year ago, and we were with Clint Eastwood, and a writer said, one of the famous writers,